Greetings, welcome to Stardate Susitna. I'm the responsible ghoul, Kathleen Fleming. This week marks the traditional and logical beginning of winter. I'll talk more about that, plus the wonderful moonlight this week, how to spot an asteroid, and heads up to change all your timekeepers next weekend. Also, a phone interview with Holly Papasadora about the Madras experience last August. Let's start with the moon. This week, La Luna is growing until full moon Friday night, Saturday morning. First quarter, when the moon has completed one quarter of its orbit around the Earth after new moon, was last Friday. Then the right one half of the near side was illuminated. Now it's bigger than one half visible, which is the definition of the gibbous shape, not quite full, but bigger than half. And the term for getting bigger is waxing. So this week we have a waxing gibbous. Though I love the graceful shape of the slender crescent, the waxing gibbous is my favorite lunar phase. It's big enough to be bright, and it's up in the evening sky. It makes outdoor activities under ambient light so easy. Full moon Friday night is the first after the harvest moon, making this the hunter's moon. However, the full moon of November is generally referred to as the full beaver moon. So unless looking for faint objects, the waxing gibbous this week is tray useful. But the bright moon is not helpful when searching for a magnitude 7 asteroid. There is an asteroid currently crossing slowly below the modest stars of Aries. You won't be able to see it without binoculars or telescopes since it's just shy of naked eye visibility. The advice is to check a finder chart for Iris, spelled I-R-I-S. Asteroid 7 Iris is the second brightest asteroid as seen from Earth. Still, unless you memorize or sketch the star field in the vicinity of where the finder chart tells you to look, and check for several nights in a row to see which point of light is slowly moving, finding Iris will be a real challenge. Now let's hear from another eclipse watcher with ties to Talkeetna. While reconnoitering my eclipse viewing site a couple months in advance, I visited Holly and her family in Madras. The August 21st path of totality started in the Pacific, made landfall Monday morning in northwest Oregon, and crossed the U.S. to exit into the Atlantic from South Carolina that afternoon. Looking at weather probabilities, coastal Oregon could have morning clouds, but east of the Cascades, the probability of clear skies increased dramatically. Madras in central Oregon was the first city near the centerline to have very favorable expectations for an unobstructed view of totality. Here is our recent conversation. Well, I have on the phone with me Holly Papasadora. Holly and her family lived in Talkeetna until, well, how long and when did you leave, Holly?
We lived in Talkeetna for about 12 years, and we left just about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago.
So a lot of people are going to remember you from the Talkeetna Hostel and from the DAC and, I don't know, the library and your kids, Nova and Vega, and your husband, Vinny. And how's everybody doing?
We're doing great. We're enjoying a beautiful Oregon autumn.
So I have interviewed a number of Talkeetna folk who went down to see the total solar eclipse of August 21st, but I haven't yet interviewed anybody who actually lives in the path. And so that's specifically what I wanted to talk to you about, Holly. I visited you in June before the eclipse and had a nice visit with you and got to see where you work and where you folks were going to be having some of your solar festivities. And so I wanted to know, how did it go?
It was amazing. Town was a little crazy. It was quite busy. I'm guessing you were probably about 15 miles south of me, I think.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But Madras was, we had about 100,000 people come into our town.
Is that what was expected? Is that what you were thinking was going to happen?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone figured that was what was going to happen. Madras has about 6,000 people, so it's a good bit larger than Talkeetna, but it's not that big, and it's not a tourist community, so we're not used to having a lot of people come to town. We don't have facilities for a lot of people, so there was a lot of logistics and planning and making that work.
As I recall, there was some concern that restaurants would be running out of food and grocery stores would be running out, and the locals should stock up well in advance, and And how did all that go?
Well, they made a huge deal about it, about buying gas in advance, buying food in advance. All the restaurants bought mass amounts of food, and they were getting refrigerated trucks because we knew that we wouldn't be able to get any supplies coming to town because traffic would be so bad. And as it turned out, it kind of backfired. Some people that were planning on coming up to Madras stayed away because they made it out kind of into a doomsday situation. And everyone who did come and camped out, they brought all their own supplies. So most people stayed in their campgrounds. They cooked for themselves. And there were a lot of issues for the local restaurants. They bought way too much food, and nobody went out to eat. So where they expected town to be extremely busy the whole time, it was kind of dead. The streets were dead, but all the places where people were camping was quite lively, and everyone just stayed there and made their own food and created their own little festivities.
And you work at the Aviation Museum. It's mostly vintage World War II airplanes, is that right?
It is.
And you were going to have NASA and the San Francisco Exploratorium. Tell me about the festivities, like the night before and then that day.
Well, we had NASA and the Exploratorium set up right outside of our facility. They were there for about 3 days before the eclipse to get ready, to test out all of their equipment, make sure everything worked. They did a couple of dry runs. The Exploratorium was doing community outreach. NASA was filming the eclipse from our location, but they weren't really connecting with the community. They were in a couple other spots in town, but I didn't get to see any of that because I was at work most of the time. But the Exploratorium was great. They were there answering questions for people. We had such a great wide open view, no trees, nothing to impede their view.
You have that huge airfield right outside the hangar. Were you surprised at how many people were there, or was it kind of crowded and just a sea of faces?
Well, Madras had several major campgrounds, and one of them was at the airport. The Madras Airport is a small city airport. It has a large runway and a lot of land because it was a B-17 training base from 1942 to 1944. Mm-hmm. So we have this large runway, and we had over 400 small aircraft fly in. So we had all of those people staying at the airport, and then we had a campground set up so that their families could come and stay and camp out as well. So I would say we probably had about 10,000 people staying at the airport.
Wow. And everybody had eclipse shades. Were there some folks with telescopes and other equipment?
There was a lot of equipment that the Exploratorium brought up. They had a lot of different things set up, and they were filming and showing everything on monitors so people could watch and they could explain things.
Oh,
so
that's
that
cool.
Was pretty neat.
And where were your kids during this?
My kids were at home. They wanted to watch the eclipse with me, but I had to go to work, and we were concerned with the traffic that they could get to work with me, but they probably wouldn't be able to make it home. So they stayed and watched from our front yard, which is awesome. They didn't have to go anywhere. They told me that they got to watch people walking around with tinfoil hats on. That was kind of fun.
That's great.
You got all sorts showing up. And it's probably a good thing they stayed at home. The traffic jam leaving from the eclipse was horrific. They predicted lots of people having trouble getting to town. What they forgot to predict was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So it took people over 5 hours to get out of our parking lot.
So people were coming a day, 2 days, 3 days in advance, but pretty much everybody wanted to leave that afternoon.
At the same time. There were actually people peeling out of the parking lot as soon as totality ended.
Well, I really enjoy when the partial phase and the sun is a thin crescent and it gets thicker and thicker, and then fourth contact when the whole thing is over. I enjoy watching that whole thing. And they were just eager to sort of avoid traffic.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. People were watching from their cars, and as soon as totality ended, they left.
So Madras had been...
Which I thought kind of killed the mood. I mean, like you said, it was an amazing... The whole experience was amazing.
So Madras had been aware of this and been planning for it for, you know, a year, 2 years. What would you say?
I would say for about 18 months they started planning. Most people in town, most different businesses had eclipse logo designs of some sort. A lot of people were selling eclipse glasses. we were giving them away. That was one of the nice things NASA gave us, about 2,000 pairs of eclipse glasses.
Mm-hmm. So I'll bet you guys are all still talking about it and recovering from it, maybe.
We are. And, well, I have to say one thing that was amazing. We had over 100,000 people in town, and one thing that made the community nervous was the cleanup afterwards. And what shocked everyone the most was that there was absolutely no garbage left behind. 100,000 people came to town. They packed up. They left. They took everything with them. There was no crime. There was no trash. There were no fires caused by people staying here, which was a big concern because we had a lot of forest fires at the time or wildland fires.
Yes.
There were just absolutely no problems. Oh. People came to town for one specific reason. They were super gracious. So it was an amazing experience.
Oh, that's good to hear. Well, thanks, Holly. And say hi to Nova and Vega for us.
Will do.
And we've been talking to Holly Papasadora, who's been living in Madras, Oregon, right next to the center line of this last total solar eclipse. Thanks, Holly.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What an amazing experience for the folks of Madras. And of course, you know that Tuesday is Halloween, All Hallows Eve, and in Mexico, Dia de los Muertos. Many cultures see this as the time when the veil between the living and the dead is thinnest. It is a cross-quarter day, about halfway between the autumnal equinox and the winter solstice, traditionally considered the first day of winter. Indeed, this starts the 3 months, the quarter of a year, with the least daylight in the northern hemisphere. So I say, welcome winter, and begone, ye rains. One more thing before signing off, daylight saving time ends next weekend. You'll be setting clocks back 1 hour before going to sleep Saturday night. The official dictate is to repeat the 1 to 2 a.m. hour Sunday morning.
Slowly, gently, night unfurls its splendor. Grasp it, sense it, tremulous and tender.
Embrace the increasing darkness while taking advantage of the useful waxing gibbous moonlight. Search for asteroid 7 Eris if the opportunity arises. Have a great week and keep looking up.
Turn your face away from the garish light of day. Turn your thoughts away from cold, unfeeling light. And listen. The music of them.